Good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, well, the views of our guest. And this evening our guest is Mr. Dennis Avery with the Hudson Institute, and we're going to be talking about unstoppable global warming. Now we hear a great deal about global warming today. Oh my goodness, soon the towns and cities that are close to the ocean are going to be inundated with water as the ocean levels rise. That we're certainly going to see dramatic changes in the very foundation of our society as it gets hotter and hotter and the polar ice caps melt and the Greenland ice caps melt and the Antarctic ice caps melt, and of course the impact of this is all related to the fact that we live so well. We drive automobiles. Some of us even may drive SUVs. Oh horrors. And some of us have great big houses and use a lot of electricity, like former Senator Al Gore, who uses as much energy in 1 month with his home as the average person does in a whole year. But Al Gore is the one who wants us to cut back the number of children we have and the amount of electricity that we're using. And even Prince Charles of England, he is known as the Sustainable Prince, and he very often will ride his bicycle to conserve energy and not, of course, to burn fuel, riding his bicycle while his chauffeur keeps the car just a little bit behind him. All the elite are making all sorts of sacrifices because they're so concerned about the planet. But Mr. Avery's written a very, very provocative book called Unstoppable Global Warming. And so with that as the background, thank you very much for being with us. I know it's a little late back there where you are.
Well, we'll make sacrifices to help people understand reality.
Well, why don't you tell us why you say this is unstoppable?
Well, the whole title of the book is Unstoppable Global Warming Every 1,500 Years. And the reason we say that is because we have massive global evidence that it's a long, moderate, natural climate cycle tied to the sun. We first came across it in 1983, when they brought up two long ice cores from Greenland, the Greenland ice sheet, 250,000 years worth of ice layers, telling us through the oxygen isotopes in those layers the air temperature when each layer was frozen. And it was the first time any human had ever seen a long Earth temperature history. And we had expected to find the evidence of the big ice ages every 100,000 years, 90,000 years of ice age, 10 or 12,000 years of warm interglacial like our own. We saw the ice ages, but we also saw something totally unexpected, which was a little moderate, 2 degrees up, 2 degrees down, natural cycle. 700 years warming, 800 years cooling, plus or minus 250 years.
Well, you hang on to that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Dennis Avery. The science is there. You're not going to read about it in the New York Times or the Washington Post. You're not going to hear about it from certainly the liberal commentators. Why don't you pick up the story there, Mr. Avery?
Well, we got the 250,000 year temperature history from the Greenland ice core. 3 years later, we had a 400,000 year temperature history from the other end of the Earth, from the Antarctic ice cores on the Vostok Glacier. And here again was this little 1,500-year cycle. And since then, we've found it in the seabed sediments of at least six oceans, in the bottom sediments of hundreds of lakes from around the world, from the cave stalagmites on every continent plus New Zealand. And my personal favorite is the fossil pollen. In North America, the fossil pollen tells us that we've had a complete change in the vegetation every 1,650 years over the last 14,000 years.
And so, really, this is nothing new. It's happened time and time before. But what about this idea that, well, but it's man's influence, of course. It's the increased CO2 in the atmosphere and the increased methane in the atmosphere, because we have all these cows around it, and they're contributing to global warming. Is there any scientific evidence that this is true? Because Al Gore says the science is in. Everybody agrees now. Oh, why, of course, man has created this global warming cycle.
Well, my favorite piece of new evidence comes from White Wing Mountain in California. Seven different species of trees, dead now, died in the year 1350, 600-odd years ago, a local volcanic explosion. Seven different species of trees growing above the current tree line. And the U.S. Forest Service says that means temperatures then were 3.2 degrees Celsius warmer than today.
And so
that's almost 7 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than today. That's significant warming. And that was before any SUVs, before any industrial emissions.
Well, what about all these scientists who keep telling us that it's man, though? Man's responsible.
Well, 70% of our warming occurred before 1940. 80% of the human-emitted greenhouse gases have come since 1940.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Miss Ravery is simply pointing out that there is so much evidence that shows that, you know, this is a cyclical affair. This has happened long before there were ever SUVs, long before we had increased CO2 in the atmosphere, and the idea that man is able to create global warming. Well, then, how do you explain, you know, today that the polar ice caps are melting on Mars? The North and South polar ice caps on Mars are melting. Nobody ever asks why that's happening. They don't want to talk about that, just like they certainly don't want to talk about any evidence that points out that this is one of the most absurd ideas that's ever come about. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you control the mass media, and you control the New York Times and the Washington Post and the major television and most of the media, you can convince the American people about anything, and they've done a good job with that. Now, you were just talking about several of the really significant things that have been pointed out when I asked you, but what about all the scientists who say that this is related directly to the CO2, and what was your response?
Well, the so-called evidence that it's humanity's fault is based primarily on computer models that have never been verified. Computer models are not evidence. Computer models are guesses carried to the eighth decimal point. I've just been looking at the working draft of the soon-to-be-issued fourth report of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Once again, we're not being given evidence. We're being given more computer models.
Right.
And to show you how insidious this is, in 1996, the UN Governmental Panel on Climate Change announced that they had found a human fingerprint on the modern warming. no evidence. Well, they gave us a graph, and the graph covered a data set from 1900 to 1995, and there was a piece of the graph from 1943 to 1970 that might have looked like it was endorsing man-made warming, but you don't provide scientific evidence in cherry-picked pieces. Either your whole graph endorses the concept, or none of it does. And our suspicions were confirmed a few months after the IPCC's 96 report, when the lead author of the science chapter admitted publicly that he had removed five different statements approved by the science advisors saying that no human fingerprint had been found, and personally inserted a statement that such a fingerprint had been found. And this was revealed in the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal by no less a figure than Frederick Seitz, the president emeritus of the National Academy of Sciences.
And so what they're really doing is just prostituting science. In fact, couldn't you almost call that deception?
I think the title on Dr. Seitz's column was Major Deception in Global Warming.
And, Sidney, I've talked to many of these scientists and gone to meetings with them, and these are the world's leading scientists, and they think this is so ridiculous. And certainly almost every scientist who comes out, you know, saying that there is global warming as in one way or another associated with the environmental lobby or the government scientists, and they do what they're told to do.
There's also more. Last year, the federal government spent more than $6 billion on climate scare research. And I've recently debated on television a very learned PhD from the University of Chicago. He's studied at Princeton, MIT, and Cambridge. But he pretends that, well, if 70% of the warming came before there was any human impact on the environment, and the key year is 1940, it's going to take a very strong piece of evidence to overcome that time disparity. They've never managed to do it.
So what is the real motivation behind this? In other words, there has to be...
Dr. Stan, I can't give you the motivation. I can't tell you why a guy with degrees from the most prestigious universities in the world would tell lies. Financial grants for research shouldn't be enough. But what I do want to do is to highlight how ridiculous the claims are.
All right. Well, we'll stick with how ridiculous the claims are then, because certainly all the evidence and the scientific evidence is that the final word is not in, that the vast majority of the scientists do not believe there's any evidence that the relationship between man's activities and global warming are reality. But I think that one of the things that we really have to clarify is there really is an element of global warming, isn't there?
Oh, yes. And there's a total of about 7 degrees Celsius since 1850. But as I told you, 70% of this came before 1940. Since 1940, the total warming is 0.2 of a degree Celsius. I give Al Gore 0.1 of a degree Celsius, 0.2 of a degree Fahrenheit. It isn't much.
No, it really isn't very much.
It's a tiny amount of warming on a planet where the temperatures vary in a total of 20 degrees Celsius from ice age to peak warming.
Well, now, how do we address the issue when we're told that the snows of Kilimanjaro are melting? They have us pictures of the snows of Kilimanjaro, and sure enough, they look like they're melting when you look at those pictures.
Well, they are melting. and this isn't totally surprising during a cyclical warming, but it's also true, and we're speculating here because the right kind of intensive study has not been done, but the land use around Mount Kilimanjaro has changed. It's been pasture for centuries. Suddenly now it's farmland, and there's been a great deal of forest fire activity because honey has been very valuable, and primitive people have gone in and tried to acquire the honey by smoking the bees out of the honey trees, and too often they've started forest fires. So you have changed the water retention capacities of the land at the base of Mount Kilimanjaro.
Well, now, what about this idea that, you know, certainly we hear that the Greenland ice pack is beginning to melt, and the Arctic Ocean is beginning to melt. You know, it used to be solid ice up there, and now, of course, maybe pretty soon we'll be able to just take a boat ride across the top of the across the top of the world, because of course the ice cap is melting.
Well, that's exactly what Eric the Red and his Viking colonists did in the year 982 when they founded a colony on Greenland. Sailing from Iceland, they encountered no Arctic ice, no sea ice. They were catching codfish, and the edges of Greenland were green. Eric the Red was not really the world's first real estate promoter. Green edges are what he saw, and his colony thrived for 300-400 years. They landed dairy cattle. They raised hay in the summer to feed their cattle through the winter. They caught codfish. They hunted seals. They traded rope made out of walrus hide for the wood that they couldn't grow on Greenland. Everything was pretty good. 3,000 colonists, 12 churches, a bishop, and then the sea ice moved in. It drove the codfish away from the shores of Greenland farther south. It prevented ships from getting through to trade with the Viking colonists between Iceland and Greenland. And the last written record in the colony, as I say, it was founded about 982, the last written record was 1408, and sometime after that, the last Viking either froze or starved.
And so we never asked the question, why do we call Greenland Greenland? And it was because 1,000 years ago, it was the shoreline was green and lush. And
it's green again today, Dr. Stan.
Has it really got
They've
enough?
Got 50,000 people, 20,000 sheep, several hundred cattle. And let's not forget that when the Vikings were exploring Greenland, they went on, Leif the Lucky, Eric the Red's son, went on west to North America, and the tip of Newfoundland they named Vinland, Vineland, grapevines. In that day, grapevines were a prominent feature of the stark, barren landscape of northern Newfoundland. It was warmer.
And in those days, of course, you could even grow grapevines in Great Britain. So it goes through these cycles, and of course, this is Mr. Avery's thesis, Unstoppable Global Warming. And the fact that this is never discussed today, in my estimation, is simply an example of the degree of, control that exists today over what most Americans think. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Mr. Dennis Avery, and of course one of the things that really disturbs me is it would appear that the ultimate end was
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
This has happened time and time again. And what is it? Did you say that? What is it about? Is it 10 degrees Celsius or
2 degrees?
Pardon?
2 degrees Celsius.
But is that the total variation from top to bottom?
4 degrees top to bottom.
4 degrees top to bottom.
That's at the latitude of Washington, D.C. and Paris. The temperature at the equator doesn't change very much, although the rainfall does. And up in the Arctic, it might change 8 degrees from top to bottom.
And that's why.
But then the polar bears have been through all of this before. And I'm not saying that to be funny. I'm saying it to make a very real point. We're being told that the wildlife species will be destroyed by rapid climate change. Dr. Stan, almost all of these climate shifts were rapid. It is typical that half the warming would occur in the first few decades of one of these cycles. And most of our wildlife species are several million years old. We've had 600 of these warmings in the last million years.
Well,
the period 5,000 years ago was perhaps 5 degrees Celsius warmer than today. And the polar bears lived through that.
Well, now, about when did the warming begin in this most recent cycle?
Well, the warming dates from about 1850. Let me run through this last couple of thousand years. We had an unnamed cold period before the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire thrived during the Roman warming. It started about 200 years B.C. It ended 600 A.D. And that's just about the period of the Roman Empire. And as the Roman Empire collapsed, the barbarians from Asia and Eastern Europe, driven by drought, had come to attack the gates of Rome. Their weapons seemed inadequate, but there were so many of them because of the widespread drought that Rome was overwhelmed. And then we had the Dark Ages. Lasted about 350 years. Then the medieval warming, which used to be known until Al Gore rewrote the history books as the little climate optimum. It was the finest weather anybody could ever remember. Populations had increased all over the world because of good crops, long growing seasons, lots of sunshine, few storms, few untimely frosts, and most of the famous castles and cathedrals in Europe were built during this period. Then in the year 1300, it shifted, and we began the Little Ice Age, which lasted 550 years. The year that Washington was at Valley Forge, and we're brought up hearing about how difficult it was for Washington soldiers. During that winter, it was so cold, the British hauled huge brass cannon from Manhattan Island to Staten Island over the ice. Not only did the cannon weigh tons, the horses that pulled them weighed tons. And there was at least one thermometer in New York that winter, and I'm told it registered 16 degrees below zero. Of course, that was Fahrenheit, but that's still very, very cold. And then about 1850 began the modern warming, and that's still underway, thank goodness. Because not only is a warming warmer, but the climates in the warmings are more stable. They are much more favorable to humans. Even the idea that we're going to die of heat stroke doesn't hold much water, because cold weather kills twice as many people as hot weather.
And so really, of course, we're really much better off as far as our crops, as far as our general living, when, of course, we have a warmer environment. And then, of course, as we pointed out, certainly they were able to grow grapes, grapevines in England, in northern England, during this period a thousand years ago. And Greenland was green. But nobody ever talks about this. Oh, my goodness. Al Gore is here to protect the world and telling us that if we don't do something, children, our children and grandchildren will say, why weren't you involved? It's very passionate, but it just isn't true. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Mr. Dennis Avery from the Hudson Institute. We're talking about this whole idea of global warming. And I would like to, of course, get into this idea that CO2 and methane are producing global warming because they're greenhouse gases. Now, could you explain to our listeners what greenhouse gases are and the part that CO2 and methane produce in warming the atmosphere?
Well, I really can't explain that part of the theory very well because it doesn't seem to hold water. And I mean that literally because it doesn't seem to be holding water vapor. Dr. Stan, let me stress that CO2 is a trace gas, 3.2% of the atmosphere. 3.2%. The man-made CO2 is 3.2% of the greenhouse gases, except for water vapor. The total human CO2 contribution to atmospheric gases and that could cause warming is 2.33%. And the total human emissions of greenhouse gases, including CO2, methane, all the other possibilities, 5.5% of all potential greenhouse contamination.
Now, what are the other 95%?
Well, water vapor is the biggest, by far. And then you have nitrogen, which is a very significant part of its, other than water vapor, nitrogen is 78% of the atmosphere. And then you have all these little gases that make up a little bit, and the human emitted part of these trace gases is an even tinier part. And quite frankly, the theory doesn't have much going for it right now.
It really
if the original projections had been correct, the warming in our thermometers would be much greater now than it is. The warming in the Arctic and the Antarctic would be several degrees Celsius, and in fact, instead, the Antarctic has...
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. Hold just for a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Mr. Avery was just commenting that if we look at the makeup of greenhouse gases, why, if you look at certainly methane and CO2, carbon dioxide, it makes up just about 5% of the greenhouse gases, and the largest factor in greenhouse gases is moisture. There's certain moisture in the atmosphere. And so, really, of course, if you look objectively at what's going on, why, it's very difficult to explain this whole theory of man-made global warming, because there's no scientific foundation for it. But as I said earlier, it really doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, and you have a motion picture that gets an Oscar award, why, pretty soon people begin to believe. Now, before we go on, I'd like Mr. Avery to get his address, his Hudson Institute website out there, and so he can tell you where you can get a copy of his book. Would you like to go right ahead?
Okay, the website is Hudson, HUDSON.org. The book is Unstoppable Global Warming Every 1500 Years. It's currently number 23 on the New York Times nonfiction paperback bestseller list, ahead of Al Gore's book. And we'd be happy to send you a copy, or you can arrange it through one of your local booksellers. The important thing, we think, is that people understand the reality of the natural 1,500-year cycle that explains at least 70% of the modern warming and a great deal of the climate variability over the last 10,000 years on our planet. And Dr. Stan, let me at this point get into the role of the sun.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay. For years, we thought the sun was a constant. We talked about the solar constant. We had computed the solar constant to 8 decimal places, and now we find it's not constant. We find that the irradiance of the sun varies by a tenth of a degree Celsius, and we know this now because we have satellites up there in space beyond the atmosphere of the planet, and we can measure it more accurately. Now, the people at the UN climate change panel say, well, a tenth of a degree isn't enough to explain the warming on the Earth. No, not by itself. But they're assuming that water vapor is amplifying the impact of CO2 changes. We're assuming with better evidence that cosmic rays are amplifying changes on the sun. Now, cosmic rays are little fragments of exploding stars from around the Milky Way that are constantly flying through space. When the sun is active, its magnetic field bats away a lot of the cosmic rays. We get fewer cosmic rays hitting the Earth. And that means we get fewer low cooling clouds, because cosmic rays create those low cooling clouds when they hit our atmosphere. This was recently demonstrated by the Danish Space Research Institute, which set up a cloud chamber in its basement with the Earth's mix of atmospheric gases, and they turned on an ultraviolet light to simulate the sun and watched the cosmic rays creating zillions of microscopic globules of water and sulfuric acid, which form the seeds for low wet clouds that deflect the sun's heat back into outer space. And this amplifies the variation in the sun's irradiance fourfold. There's also a role, probably, for atmospheric chemistry involving ozone. And this also seems to have a modest amplifying effect. What we do know is that the Earth has a 1,500-year climate cycle, natural, moderate, solar length. The coldest part of the Little Ice Age, the two coldest parts of the Little Ice Age, occurred when there were hardly any sunspots, and the sun today is more active than it has been in 1,100 years. It is not surprising that our planet has warmed. But it has not warmed in line with the CO2. It has warmed and cooled in alignment with the solar index. And this is based on the amplitude of sunspot cycles, the length of sunspot cycles, several other esoteric astronomic factors that I won't get the audience drugged through. But CO2 does not correlate with our temperature changes. The sunspot cycles do.
And, of course, those people who would have a retching transformation of society, and that's a term that comes from Al Gore's first book, where he talks about the retching transformation of society, they don't want to hear what Mr. Avery is saying. They really want, of course, to have massive government control that will force our nation, the United States, to cut back on energy consumption 80-90%, impoverish our people, destroy our industry, and in my estimation, this is a direct attack on our nation by people who have a different worldview, a different idea of how the world should live, and specifically how we should live, I doubt very much if Al Gore is going to give up his 10,000-square-foot mansion or his massive consumption of energy just because, of course, I'm not certain he really believes what he says, but he certainly says it in a very convincing manner. Well, certainly, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for our guest. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And certainly our guest has spent a great deal of time looking into this and trying to evaluate this from a scientific basis. And we've talked to a number of other scientists. In fact, didn't you work with Dr. Fred Singer, who's certainly the world's most most eminent climatologist?
I do work closely with Fred. He's a co-author on the book. He has truly fine credentials, including having been for 5 years vice chairman of the U.S. Advisory Commission on Oceans and Atmospheres. And that's what, of course, we're talking about in climate, oceans and atmospheres.
Well, now, of course, they're talking about how, well, this is terrible because the oceans are warming, and that's, of course, going to make it so much more difficult for our aquatic life.
Except they aren't. And as you know, Dr. Stan, we have been startled, amazed, and heartened, at least I've been heartened, by the fact that we now have data from 2,500 new smart floats scattered around the world's oceans, sending back real-time information on temperatures in the upper 700 feet of the oceans. It's the first time we've ever had good data on ocean temperatures. And the first surprise they gave us was a sudden ocean cooling. Between 2003 and 2005, the oceans lost 21% of the heat that they had gained in the previous 50 years. It's gone. It's not in the biosphere. Nobody knows where it went for sure, but apparently it just went into outer space. It was not predicted. The climate models are totally unable to accommodate this because they build their predictions in layers over time. They can't deal with chaos, and this sudden ocean cooling is chaotic. And not only did it happen once, but the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says this sudden cooling confirms a suspicion that there'd been a previous sudden ocean cooling between 1980 and 1983, and that means we've had two of these sudden, unpredictable, unaccountable events in 30 years.
Well, it was last year when we had this flock of hurricanes. We had Hurricane Katrina, and we had several other major hurricanes. And the explanation that was given by the media was obviously global warming. How do you respond to that?
Well, we've had a reanalysis of global cyclones and hurricanes since that set of events. What we've found is that there is no global increase in tropical cyclones or hurricanes. There was an increase in the Atlantic during a particular period. There was a decrease, offsetting, in the Pacific, and no significant trend anywhere else. And Dr. William Gray, the leading hurricane predictor in the United States, one of the leaders in the world in that field, says there's a 60-year cycle in the Atlantic of 30 years of more hurricanes per decade, 30 years of fewer hurricanes per decade. So this is not an artifact of global warming. It's an artifact of other climate events, not just sea surface temperatures. In fact, they say wind shear is much more important in triggering hurricanes than is sea surface temperature.
And of course, it's really so humorous, you know, whenever the weatherman is going to explain what's going on and why there's some aberration, either things are getting cooler or they're getting warmer or stormier or less stormy, the explanation for it all is it's always global warming. And, you know, once again, they're repeating over and over and over again, and then pretty soon people just sort of repeat it as if it were a reality.
Well, what's even more hilarious is the idea that we're going to have famines because we're going to have so much sunny, stable weather with good rainfall.
Yes.
I mean, the reason they built those castles and cathedrals during the medieval warming is because they had lots of labor and enough food to pay those workers to work on something besides a farm. And then during the Little Ice Age, Britain started that period of history with probably 5.5 million people. At the depths of the Little Ice Age, they were down to 1.5 million. And the cold and the famines forced the invention of modern agriculture. The first thing they learned to do was to give up this old everybody pastures their cattle and sheep on the common pasture. Instead, they used hedges to fence their fields, and then they would rotate livestock and crops so that the manure from the animals would enrich the soil. This doubled crop yield. Then they invented the seeder. So instead of just wastefully broadcasting the seed by hand, they actually placed the seeds in the ground. Much better crops, much less seed required, and again an increase in yields. And then they developed the team ox plow. So for the first time they were able to plow the heavy soils down in the river valleys, which were always the most productive soils, but which had never been farmed before. And that emphasis on agricultural technology began the Green Revolution for the world. Britain, as I say, during the depths of the Little Ice Age, didn't have enough food for 1.5 million people. By the time the Little Ice Age ended, they were feeding 15 million people, and today they're feeding 60 million people with high-tech scientific farming. It's not climate. It's man's knowledge and ingenuity.
Well, now, what about this idea of the CO2? If CO2 is going to sort of strangle agriculture, and CO2 is terrible for the forests, how do you respond to that?
Well, CO2 acts like fertilizer for plants and trees. Between 1982 and 1999, satellites tell us that the vegetation of the world increased by 6%. The major change during that period was not temperature. The major change was the increase in atmospheric CO2. And a doubling of CO2 for herbaceous plants means a yield increase of 30 to 50%. Those are our crops we're talking about.
And so basically, of course, CO2 is certainly a fertilizer. It actually makes the crops, makes the trees, make everything grow better. But Al Gore doesn't tell us that.
Well, Al Gore is trying to frighten us.
I
think it's almost criminal the way the global warming alarmists are playing fast and loose with scientific knowledge and are giving our kids sleepless nights. I mean, it's one thing to talk about Hansel and Gretel because everybody knows that's a fairy tale and that there's no witch out there in the neighborhood waiting to roast them in an oven. But when you talk about global warming, they're very seriously trying to tell us that everybody's going to be fried. And this is not calculated to make the kids feel more secure.
And, of course, they're working within the churches today, trying to get the Now, the churches, to back this idea, what we need to do is have more concern about the environment and the environmental programs. And the great tragedy, of course, is that there are a lot of gullible people who say, well, after all, didn't the Bible tell us that we were to be stewards of the earth? Maybe we ought to get involved and convince people global warming is a reality. We'll convince the Christians, we'll get them on board for this massive campaign to transform the world and save it from global warming. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment. Our guest is Mr. Dennis Avery. His organization, what's more, it's the Hudson Institute. What's that website?
Hudson.org.
Hudson.org. And, of course, it's a very, very excellent website there. And the book, Unstoppable Global Warming. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap it to this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and you've got about 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What's the final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, I think they need to understand that our planet is always warming or cooling, not because of what humans do, but because of what a huge star 300,000 times larger than the Earth called the Sun does, and it's coronal temperatures reach 1,000,000 degrees Celsius, and really we're pretty puny stuff compared to the sun. I'm all in favor of energy conservation. I'm all in favor of the wise use of resources, but I'm also in favor of giving everybody on this planet the kind of lifestyle choices and longevity and life satisfaction that my children are getting today, and that means energy. And people who are saying not only give up oil and give up gas and give up coal, but at the same time are saying, oh, don't use nuclear and don't build any hydroelectric dams, and by the way, we're suing to stop this geothermal plant in Northern California that has no greenhouse emissions and no spent fuel and is the cleanest energy system ever devised by humans. We're suing to stop that too. What they're really talking about is extending global poverty. I don't think global poverty is good for the planet, and I don't think it's good for our children.
And I certainly agree with you, and I think that the people out in the listening audience have to understand that there really is an agenda behind all of this. Al Gore is a brilliant individual. Many of the people who are pushing these concepts of global warming are brilliant individuals. It's brilliant individuals. It's just that they have a different worldview than we do. They do not like the industrialized society. This is a direct frontal attack on a modern-day civilization. Well, Mr. Avery, thank you very much for staying up with us. It's always a pleasure having you. Thank you so much, and perhaps maybe we'll get you onto our week. You've been with all three of our regular daily programs. I'd love to get you on our weekend program, but that's for another time. Thank you so very much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Good night. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Mr. Avery, and I hope you've enjoyed the program. I think it's so vitally important that you learn how to discuss and how to counter the fallacious arguments, but the dangerous arguments being made today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and if any of you would like, of course, to hear the entire conversation, we do talk during the breaks with Mr. Avery, and he brings up so many important issues. If you'd like to get the entire conversation, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this is the third time I've talked to Mr. Avery, and I learn something different every time, and of course the other conversations are available. We do have an excellent 4-tape set on global warming, but I think you really need to put things into the proper perspective. This all has to do with sustainable development. It has to do with a direct frontal attack on Western civilization. The ideas came out of the Second Earth Summit in 1992 in something called the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, and we have summarized that in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, which we recommend to you. There's really nothing quite like it. They're a group of very wealthy and very powerful men who believe that there are too many people in the world. And, of course, we have to lower living standards. We've got to impoverish the common people. Now, not people like Al Gore with a 10,000-square-foot home and a couple of SUVs. It's for people like you and I who are using up the natural resources that, of course, the elite need and want for themselves. As incredible as it may seem, there is an agenda. There's a population control agenda. There's an effort, of course, to impoverish our people and to lower our living standards. In the Sustainable Development Syllabus, you'll read the Earth Charter, which is the master plan that talks about redistribution of the wealth of the world, equitable distribution within nations, and between nations. It's to, of course, distribute our wealth and impoverish our people. The whole idea is, how are you going to get the people to ration a use of energy on themselves? How are you going to get them out of the cars? Why, of course, you're going to create crises. You're going to raise the price of gasoline to $6, $8, $10 a gallon, and you'll ration the gas yourself. How will we get you to cut back on your use of electricity and the comfortable life you lead? Why, we'll raise the price of electricity so high that you're not going to be able to afford it. And, of course, then as the jobs leave our country, and there's a new report out saying we're going to lose about 40 million jobs. Dr. Blinder, who's a former vice chairman of the Fed, has come out with an estimate on this. If you'd like to read Dr. Blinder's material, it was reported this week in the Wall Street Journal. 40 million jobs are going to leave America, and no jobs to replace them. What's going to happen to those 40 million people? Aw, shucks, well, we got a problem. Lower living standards, I guess. If you'd like to get the Sustainable Development Syllabus, my video on sustainable development and or the four-tape set, this will give you an excellent oversight on what's going on. That's Sustainable Development Syllabus, a Sustainable Development four-tape set, Sustainable Development video. And then, of course, to put this whole incredible story into perspective, let me suggest a talk. It's called The Forbidden Secret, and it will give you some insight into what really energizes these people who are so intent upon destroying Christian civilization, Western civilization. That's Forbidden Secret. It's available in video, in the DVD at the present time, and there's a syllabus that comes with that. It's right now it's called Immigration Invasion, but it will be going to be renamed the Forbidden Secret Syllabus. And it will give you the text and, of course, many of the speeches and documentation on what we're talking about. That's the Forbidden Secret, the syllabus, certainly the DVD. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like more information. That's 1-800-544-8927, and talk to Mary about a suggested donation. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty. But for our provision and protection, remember, we're involved in a spiritual battle, a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And Christian civilization is under attack today. to Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in a battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and we do hope that that many of you will check to try to prove us wrong, and if you cannot prove us wrong, that you'll join us in this epic struggle, a struggle for the very souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and we're going to be talking about some of the videos she's made. We're going to be talking about the spreading of belief in witchcraft and the supernatural among our young, and even increasing belief in the supernatural among many of the adults in this country. And there is a growing fascination with this idea of being able to find the real power, the hidden power that is hidden within each one of us. And it is that old adage that began in the Garden of Eden, when the serpent said to Eve, "And ye shall be as gods." And this has been the message down through the eons, that man has within his own capacity the ability to be as God. And of course, to have these supernatural powers, to be able to contact this other dimension. And of course, on the front line of this is a woman who actually came out of the occult, out of the New Age movement, having been born in India and raised in a British family, during the latter days of the British Empire. And then going to England and becoming involved with the New Age movement, and then becoming a Christian. And Carol's been working very hard for many years to expose this fifth column, this subversive religious fifth column within our society today. Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It is always such a wonderful privilege to be with you.
Well, tell us what you're seeing today, because things are moving very, very fast as these ideas are being spread in our children and even in our adults.
Oh, it is just incredible how quickly things are moving. You're absolutely right. About 20 years ago, I made a film called Gods of the New Age, and I wrote a book of the same title. And just watching in the past two decades the change of Eastern mysticism, Hinduism, yoga, the way that yoga is now being taught in schools. It is just incredible. I am on the verge of finishing a film on yoga, and in fact, this very week I'm concluding it, and you are going to get one of the first copies, which I am very excited to tell you about. But, you know, just the incredible thing of how yoga has now completely appeared to be, is marketed as though it isn't a Hindu Eastern mystical practice.
But isn't this really very similar to what we're actually taking up in so many of our Christian churches today, in the name of contemplative prayer, where you sort of put yourself into this, in this state of almost this state of almost like a state that you'd have with yoga?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. It's crossed into markets. It's gone across from secular thinking into our Christian institutions and organizations, and in fact, this is what my latest film is about, how it has come into the church, how it is presenting itself in the church, how we are opening ourselves up to the spiritual realm out there without even calling it a spiritual realm in some cases. I mean, it's just amazing. 20 years, 30 years ago, it was so obvious that Eastern mysticism, that yoga came from Hinduism. It was so obvious it came from India. But then it started getting packaged as a scientific program, as though it was somehow scientifically proved that it was able to bring about a fitness. It was able to...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, you go right ahead and pick your thought up there, Carol.
Yeah, I was just mentioning that the way that yoga became repackaged as though they could take away the spiritual aspects of it, as though it could be scientifically monitored somehow, that the sort of spiritual connection that one opened oneself up to could be monitored in a scientific way and, you know, presented as scientifically showing improvement. For instance, just recently in 2003, I believe it was, there were researchers at California State University that studied these TEP scores at the Accelerated School District, and particularly focused in on this new yoga that is being taught to children in schools, 100 schools across 26 states. They've adopted this GUBA's yoga educational program, and more than 300 physical education instructors have been trained in it. So here we had the researchers of the California State University looking into how the students were performing. And so scientifically, they have found a correlation between the kids that take yoga, that they've got better behavior, better grades, and they said these young kids that have been taking these programs are much more fit than the district average, you know, in the physical fitness thing. So they take these tests, they show that they're scientifically supposedly accelerated and being able to perform better, and they're not seeing that here in schools where they've taken out the Bible, they've taken out prayer, they've taken out Christian foundational anything that is associated with a Christian worldview, and yet they're bringing in Eastern mysticism completely connected with yoga, Hinduism. All of that is part of this Eastern mystical worldview, and this is now being brought into schools where they say that they can empty, that they can separate the physical from the spiritual. So it's absolutely amazing that this has grown. I mean, at a time when we've got Harry Potter being coming into the schools, where the Bible's being taken out, Harry Potter's been allowed to be read aloud in the classrooms, and here we've got witchcraft brought in a child-friendly way to our young students, teaching them all about this young wizard, learning wizardry.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Carol. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Carol Matriciana, and we're talking about yoga that is coming into our schools, which is basically a form of Eastern mysticism. Could you explain to our listeners who really don't understand yoga what this is, how it works, and why it is so deadly dangerous?
Well, Dr. Stan, as you said earlier in your program, I was born and raised in India, and I was fifth generation born in India, and very, very familiar with Eastern mysticism and Hinduism. And in India, yoga and Hinduism are synonymous. The practice of yoga is something that is done by most Hindus in the last stage of their lives when they're preparing to go into their next phase of life in their reincarnation cycle. So the Indian, the Hindu believes that their body goes from body to body, so that when they die out of this one body, their soul goes into another body and another body and so on. And depending on what they've accomplished or done in past lives determines how they will come back in future lives. So yoga is a very, very important part of preparing them for death, preparing them for reincarnation, helping them to change their mind through mind exercises, even though they're also physical exercises, but the physical exercises are connected with deities. Every body posture is connected with a deity, the name of an animal that the body gets into in order to be able to become one with the universe, become one with the idea. The Hindu idea of deity is that all nature is divine, if you will. So the The problem with man is he doesn't understand his divinity, and he doesn't understand that he's one with the cosmic consciousness. And so yoga is part of changing his consciousness, changing his mind to become one and become united with the sort of higher consciousness, this divinity, before he gives up this body in order to be prepared to bring his soul into the next body.
Well, Carol, this state of mind that is being stressed, this almost altered state of consciousness, do you think this opens one up to demonic possession?
It's certainly, if one comes from a biblical worldview, we would understand it, because the Bible explains that we have to love the Lord our God with all our mind. We have to bring our mind under the mind of Christ. We have to have God's opinion. So from a biblical point of view, we're told not to give up our minds, not to put our minds into neutral, so to speak, because it would open up a doorway for our minds to be taken over by another being. Now, within Hinduism, they don't see that. That is not what they would see in a negative way. They believe that every single energy out there, every single sort of force, if you will, is part of divinity. So, yes, from a biblical viewpoint, of course we would say that it's supernaturally dangerous and something that we mustn't get involved in. From an Eastern perspective, they say you must get involved in that in order to understand the energy that you have inside of yourself that has to be awakened. In fact, even more incredible, it's only in the Bible that the serpent is seen as the enemy of God. But in every other culture, the serpent is believed to be a divinity of wisdom, an energy of wisdom. And actually, within yoga practice, this cobra, this serpent, this energy is called Kundalini. And it is believed to lay dormant at the base of each person's spine and must be awakened through yoga. This serpent power is awakened, brought up through the chakras or psychic energies that are believed to be along the spine, and ultimately to come up to the very top psychic energy, which is called the third eye, between the two eyes up in the forehead. And then this will ultimately open the yoga practitioner up through a mind-altering experience to the understanding that they are divine and part of divinity and can be united with cosmic consciousness or the Hindu god, which is an impersonal force. So it is unbelievable that these two completely opposing worldviews are not, it's not called a worldview when this yoga practice is brought into schools and being practiced now in hundreds of schools across America. The young children, the teacher, Gerber, that put this thing together, specifically worked on taking out everything that appeared to be spiritual. She very, very specifically engineered this. She, she's been a yoga practitioner since, for many, many years. And she wanted to bring yoga into public schools, but there was this absolute outcry that it was religious. And so she put together this program to supposedly take out all these sort of Sanskrit, Eastern, Hindu concepts, and she called them completely different things. So she called breathing, which is an important part of yoga to stimulate an altered state of consciousness, she started calling it bunny breathing for her little children, and all these different terms. Meditation, she didn't call it meditation, she called it time in. So she changed the names of these practices, stripped every piece of anything that could vaguely be construed as spiritual or Eastern, or come from its Eastern worldview, its Eastern base, and she was able to bring it into schools. And in fact, the government pays grant money to bring this to bring these teachers, the federal government gives grants to gym teachers who completed a teacher training course in yoga. And so, hence we've now got this thing in with kids who we would never, that would never be, it wouldn't even be imaginable that they could read the Bible or say Christian prayers or learn anything Christian in schools, and yet they're able to practice Hindu mysticism, Eastern mysticism, in the form of this sort of new type of yoga.
Well, you know, I think one of the hardest things for the average American, even for many American Christians, to recognize is the fact that there is a spiritual dimension behind everything going on today. We live in a materialistic world, but there is a spiritual dimension in which these demonic spirits and these other forces work. And one of the things, of course, that the mystics do, many of them, will actually tap into this other dimension. Now, certainly our students, when they're putting themselves in this altered state of consciousness, do not understand that there is another dimension, and there really are spiritual forces there that would love to claim their soul. Sounds pretty absurd, but would you agree that this is the real danger for the people who put their minds into this altered state of consciousness, that they're opening themselves up to be possessed?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, even the Hindus, even strong Hindus, will absolutely admit that yoga is part of their religion. It's part of the sacred teachings and practices of their religion. And while they wouldn't agree that this is negative, the way that Bible-believing Christians would understand that that there are dangers, the Hindu, the Orthodox Hindu, will admit that it is a religious practice. But, Dr. Stan, I think the difficulties are that people don't believe that Satan is real. They don't believe that he is a person. Somehow they've relegated Satan to this force, this impersonal force, just the way that they've relegated God to being an impersonal force. So when you don't have a personal attribute given to Satan, then it just sort of becomes this, you know, it's just not even explained in a way. For instance, even in the Harry Potter books, where Harry Potter's got this energy, which is explained as the white side of his enemy, the evil Lord Voldemort, who has the dark side. So once we start calling this force the light side and the dark side and not giving it a personal characteristic, then it all sort of becomes rather nebulous and doesn't appear to be dangerous. But from a biblical viewpoint and a biblical understanding, God thought so seriously about this the personality of these fallen angels. In fact, I think the thing is that many people just don't know enough about angels and the spiritual world. And when I made the movie Supernatural Powers, the battle between good and evil, in fact, I don't know if you know that it got the best documentary for 2006, for last year.
I really didn't, but we do carry the video. In fact, I was noticing we had copies of it the other day. That's the Supernatural.
I was just thrilled when it was given the best documentary of 2006. But in that, we explained that God created all the angels, and that the angels had free will to follow God or not, just as man was created in the image and likeness of God and was given free will, and that there were a third of the angels that chose not to follow God. And these are the fallen angels of the demonic spirits that are longing to have a physical body to come into. So they will come and lie and cheat and try and open the minds of whoever will accept them into whoever's mind will be opened enough so that these beings can work and communicate through a physical body.
Well, you know, the big problem is, Carol, that our ministers are not teaching this. In fact, they haven't been taught it in their school. And many of them don't even believe in hell or the Satan or the demonic spirits or the spiritual battle that's taking place. So how can they teach their parishioners? Well, Carol, you go right ahead with the story, and certainly I was just commenting. One of the big problems we have today is that we have so many Christians who are spiritually illiterate. Their mind have been filled with all sorts of things and doctrines, but they don't understand the very foundation of Christendom and the spiritual battle that began in the Garden of Eden and is coming to its culmination today. And so pick the story up from there.
You're absolutely right. And each of my films that I make, I try in a different way to bring out this, the idea of a personal God and a personal enemy. And the incredible fight in our minds, our minds are the battlefield for the enemy of God. And this latest film that I have just completed, in fact, is just going through its completion this week. I went to India. It's been about 4 years in the making. I went to India to interview the experts on Hinduism and yoga teachers and asked them if the practice of yoga, the physical practice of yoga, can be separated from the spiritual practice of yoga. And they absolutely say no, that it is just for them. They are offended that the West treats Hinduism rather like a recipe, and they say that Hinduism is not like a recipe ingredient that can be extracted from yoga. That Hinduism and yoga are totally synonymous, and in fact, Hinduism Today, which is a leading Indian publication, admits that Hinduism is the soul of yoga, and it's based on Hindu scriptures and developed by Hindu sages, and that yoga opens up new and more refined states of mind. And to understand them, one needs to believe in and understand the Hindu way of looking at God. And they warn that a Christian trying to adapt these practices of yoga will likely disrupt their own Christian beliefs. So they understand that there are two different worldviews, that they are opposing worldviews, and yet today we find that Christians are taking yoga, trying to take just the physical practice of yoga, and use it just for physical fitness, not realizing that yoga is designed to open up the mind, to introduce the deities as they see them. They call them deities, but from a biblical point of view, we would see them as fallen angels and demons that are in rebellion to God, and that they seek to come into the bodies of human beings, so that they can use their vocal cords and their hearts and their minds to perpetuate evil behavior that is quite contrary to what God has designed us to do. And
what you're really describing is demonic possession. So many people say, oh, this could never happen. Nobody's ever possessed by a demon. And don't you for 1 minute believe they could not be. Many people are possessed by demons. And if you haven't yet read this wonderful book we carry called Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, let me suggest you read that. This was my first introduction to this concept, and I will tell you it's one of the most gripping books you will ever read. And once you've read it, you'll be able to understand what Carol's talking about. There really are people who are actively possessed by demonic spirits, and of course it has horrible results. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana, and we're simply talking about this concept of demonic possession. And, of course, with so many of the things that have been introduced into our churches and into our schools and in every aspect of our society in the name of yoga and meditation and contemplative prayer and walking the labyrinth, and all of these things are opening you up to demonic possession. So pick the story up there, Carol.
Well, I was telling about the adventures of going to India to interview experts on Hinduism, and of course we had done this 2 decades ago when we made our movie Gods of the New Age, and we started talking to the practitioners of yoga back then and followed the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh to his community in Oregon, in Antelope, in Antelope, Oregon. And if you remember that footage of hundreds of orange-clad devotees of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh involved in these different types of meditation, being completely possessed. And when you saw it on camera and the frightening effects of them opening up their minds, going into these trances, and actually seeing their bodies contort and move, and as they swirled and rotated and fell on the floor, blood coming out of one of their nostrils, and oh, it was just, and screaming, just that. I remember when we were filming that, being in this huge open sort of building that didn't have sides, had a roof, but the screaming, the pitch of the screaming as these hundreds of people were opening themselves up to being possessed.
That was one of the most gripping pieces of film footage I've ever seen.
It was incredible. And Dr. Stan, you are going to be amazed at some of the footage that is in the film that I'm just in the process of completing called Yoga Uncoiled. And there we go to the practitioners of Hinduism in India, where the Hindu Vishwa Parishad, which is one of the largest missionary organizations in India, admits that Hinduism is giving way to that Christianity has now been taken over by Hinduism, and that their missionaries in the East have become the great missionaries through yoga, that they are sending their teachers to the West to take over through yoga. And it is just amazing seeing hundreds and thousands of these Hindu disciples at the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, the Allahabad Kumbh Mela, and you look at them, and they look very different to people that appear to be spirit-filled in a good and positive way here. I mean, they were naked, covered in ashes, covered in matted, matting their hair, and looking completely completely demented.
Well, because how about a demonic? Would that be a better?
Absolutely. And it's when you actually see all this on camera, where people say that no, this can't possibly happen. But you know, I have been in the middle of demon possessed people, and I know it to be real. I have watched it. In fact, in one of our filming sessions, this fellow came into the tent as we were changing our films in the camera, and we needed a sort of a place away from the sun so that we could change our equipment. This fellow came in with this deep, dark, haunting, terrified voice, and at swords. Here I was at the end of his sword as he was about to pierce his sword through me. And fortunately, by the power, the almighty power of a much greater God, I was able to calm this demented person to, to leave me alone.
Now, of course, did you get this on film?
No. We were changing at that particular point, we were changing our film in the cameras, so we couldn't take any film as this was taking place, but I'll tell you, it is absolutely sketched so clearly, etched on my mind. The moment that happened was indeed a scary moment for me. But I have been in the middle. I've been involved in counseling people that have been in satanic cults and in Hindu cults, and so I have had the opportunity of speaking to people who are demon possessed, and actually speaking to these voices that come out of them and accuse me, want to kill me.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and Carol is simply talking about how she's had the opportunity on many occasions to minister to people who are demonically possessed who would actually threaten to kill her. And, of course, we have 4 tape sets with other people who are really in these deliverance ministries. People laugh at it. Oh, there's no such thing. Yes, there is today. Unless you understand that there really is another dimension, there really are demonic spirits, there really are people who worship Lucifer, who hate Christianity, and of course they're doing everything they can today to destroy and discredit Christianity right here in America. And of course, when we see the witchcraft being even taught in our schools with the writings of Harry Potter, this is applied witchcraft 101. And yet this is be allowed in our schools, but we would never dare and allow mention of the word of the name of Jesus Christ or have a prayer in our schools. Go ahead, Carol.
Yes, it is. It's amazing. And I think one of the insidious things about, when Satanism or the cults are very obvious, people recognize them. But when they're sugar-coated and cleaned up and called scientific or child-friendly, and can come into our schools, it's absolutely awful. I was talking about this this huge, great Indian, this Hindu festival called the Kumbh Mela, and how some years ago I was present at that, and it's organized by an India's Vishva Hindu Parishad, which is probably the world's largest missionary organization, and the Kumbh Mela that I went to in 1979 in Allahabad, India, there was actually the Second World Congress on Hinduism. There were about probably 60,000 delegates from around the world that were speaking at that, and one of the speakers said that our mission in the West has been crowned with fantastic success. Hinduism is becoming the dominant world religion, and the end of Christianity has come near. And in this film that I'm just finishing, called Yoga Uncoiled, we show how yoga teachers in the West have become the leading missionaries of Hinduism, and there are probably about 70,000 of them in America today, in more than 20,000 locations, teaching probably an estimated 35 to 40 million fitness fanatics. And
this is Dr. Stan, and Carol is basically saying that they're teaching, there's 70,000 missionaries here from the Hindu countries, and they're teaching 30 to 40 million people in these new programs.
Yes, I mean 30 to 40 million Americans are taking yoga across this nation. And what they don't understand is the yoga teachers are basically the leading missionaries of Hinduism, because Hinduism and yoga have been repackaged as a fitness exercise. People don't understand that when they go into the gyms, when they go into the YMCAs, when they go into spas or schools and are taking yoga, that they don't understand that they are being indoctrinated into Eastern mysticism, a mind changing program. It's not physical exercise. If you want to do physical exercise, you do not sit down in a lotus position and have your mind changed. You go out and you sweat out on a soccer field or in a swimming pool or on the tennis courts. And if you want to do physical exercise, then do radical physical exercise. But yoga specifically teaches to have your mind changed. These exercise programs are presented. They offer themselves as stress reduction or burnout reduction or concentration benefit programs. This is not exercise. Yes, there's some stretching involved, and yes, there's a little bit of sort of rolling around, but it's not physical exercise. So what's happening is yoga is basically experiencing a renaissance worldwide, and it's probably about a $27 billion industry. And here this new type of Eastern mysticism is coming into our gyms and health exercises, health clinics, health studios across the nation, offering stress benefits, and it's promoted in hospital programs as an alternative medical therapy. It claims to reduce blood pressure and benefit the heart, and it is a new type of mental conditioning, now once again being made child-friendly, just like witchcraft was made child-friendly and introduced into the school system through Harry Potter books. So today, we have this new type of yoga being made child-friendly in 100 schools across the nation in 26 states. It's being called Gerber's Yoga Ed Program, and children are being taught it, and it is being promoted as bringing in good benefits for young children, that they can, that they have better behavior and better grades if they do this program. And you know, at a time when public schools, there's no religion, that religion should not be taught in schools, and if they've kicked out Christianity, then also the practice of yoga should not be in public schools. So it's just everything is changing its language, it's changing its presentation, but basically the bottom line is to condition our minds, to get us into a relationship with supernatural beings out there that are changing us and ultimately preparing us for the world leader, the Antichrist, that is going to come in and rule the world. And there's this sort of huge global conditioning process going on that so many people just don't understand. And it's interesting that it's not only coming in through school programs or fitness programs, or but it's also coming through the church. And it's being called, this sort of new Eastern mysticism is being called contemplative prayer or centering techniques. And what it does is, it gets Christians into a place where they're not meditating on the Bible, they're not meditating on the opinion of God, they're relating to spiritual experiences and feelings, and having their mind emptied to be able to bring in these sort of feel-good ideas that certainly are changing the psyche of the practitioners. I mean, I don't doubt for a moment that these young school kids that are being involved, there's this school program that's been going on now for about 6 years, a six-year-old yoga program that is being promoted as helping distracted children to focus. They're saying that if your children have ADD and focusing issues, that this type of yoga is very important to help children focus and improve their behavior. So here, once again, a spiritual exercise is coming into the schools to change our children's spiritual, mental, spiritual being, to make them more docile or more easily pliable to a controlling method that is going to ultimately be able to come in some global capacity to change the minds of people and make them docile and prepare them for the coming world leader. And, you know, interestingly, of course, we see the same ecumenical program coming through Islam. Very long ago, there was the official Iranian radio that started broadcasting these lengthy theories on the imminent appearance of their messianic figure, who it was believed would defeat Islam's enemies and which of course are the Christians and the Jews. And here there was this, you know, that the entire world is going to have this Islamic Shiite rule. And the Muslims are waiting for their 12th Imam, or Mahdi, to come in, and this Mahdi will appear suddenly in Mecca. And interestingly, the Iranian president expects both Jesus and the Mahdi to return and wipe away repression. So we've got the Muslims waiting for the Messiah, we've got Christians waiting for their sort of coming Messiah.
The return of Christ, and of course the Jews are waiting for the Messiah, and the Hindu is waiting for Maitreya. So.
That's exactly it, and so there's this huge conditioning process that's going on, and so many people are just deceived and blind and don't understand that in order for this world being to, this being to come in, there's got to be a conditioning process, and the conditioning process is being done through mind-altering techniques, bringing in spiritual entities into very, very young kids through all sorts of methods and means. And one of them is yoga, which is what my new film is going to be about. And I think you will be absolutely amazed when you look at a Christian yoga teacher that I interviewed in this, who starts talking about she has completely turned around Christian yoga or the practice of Eastern mysticism and calling it Christian yoga. It is the most incredible interview. It will be an amazing film. I truly believe it's the best documentary that I've had the privilege of making, and I've made about, over 53 documentaries in the last couple of decades, and I think this one is going to be the most powerful.
When are we going to have it available?
Well, I'm going to send you your free complimentary director's copy next week, Dr. Stan.
Right, you are
going to see it.
Well, we'll look forward to it, and certainly we'll carry that, and we'll do everything we can to help you get this material disseminated across America, because I think you're certainly, we're very fortunate to have you and your talent trying to utilize video to educate the people. But before we go on, I want you to get out your webpage. I want you to get out the information on how people can get your material. We do carry a great deal of Carol's material, and we'll probably be carrying more, but I want you to know how to get in touch with her material and with her webpage. So what can you tell them?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. They can go on to my www.caryl, I spell my name Caryl, TV, like television, .com. And if they'd like to even make pre-orders, pre-sales for the Yoga Uncoiled video, I will be very, very happy to take any pre-sale orders. Or they can phone me at 951-301-1101.
Give that one more time, please.
951-301-1101. A lot of ones and a lot of zeros. C-O-1-1-1-0-1.
The thing is that the average American finds it so difficult to believe that this could be in our churches, yet it is. It's called the emerging church. And what we want is for Christians to have an experience. Not to study Christianity, the Word of God, but to experience Christianity. And we're looking for that Christian experience. And, of course, what we're really doing is opening ourselves up to demonic possession. And the same thing, of course, really is true in every aspect of life. It's in our schools. Certainly, it's in our movies. It's everywhere we look. And the target is the mind of the American people. Altering our perception of reality. They're doing a tremendous job about it. And the big problem is it is taking place because Christians do not understand the spiritual warfare that we're engaged in. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. I agree with much of what you say, and it's just, I'm amazed that here you are, always working hard, opening up people's minds, and it still amazes me that people are deceived and can't see. You know, it's a spiritual blindness. That's what's so incredible. a spiritual blindness clouds the minds of so many so that they cannot see the biblical reality. And I have seen the reality of demonic beings, spiritual beings. I've grown up in India, and it's very prevalent and it's very accepted. And, you know, one sees it in, I mean, my daily living, my going to school and living in India, one could see spiritual apparitions and signs and wonders in a way, and incredible powers that came with these things when you gave yourself over to them. And here we've got young kids in, through the Harry Potter series that want to be like their little hero, Harry Potter, and they want to be able to do the things that Harry Potter can do, the magic that Harry can do. And Harry says, just concentrate. Concentrate on what you want, and it'll happen. And here he specifically teaches young children how to be able to train their minds and be able to think in a different way. And Harry, of course, lives in this world of supernaturalism, in the so-called imaginary school of Hogwarts, school of witchcraft and wizardry, where there are ghosts that live with them, and animals and beings that change into from humans to animals and animals to humans. So there is every aspect of the supernatural world is illustrated in a child-friendly way so that children can see the supernatural through the eyes of Harry. But it looks exciting, and it's a power that Harry has and is able to work and overcome difficulties with, and so they want it. So here it is being shown in the books and, of course, in movies, as you mentioned. I made a film called Gods of Entertainment, where we show the occultism that is prevalent through special effects and the incredible ability of the movie world to be able to make fantasy into reality and capture the imaginations of young children through video games, through the internet, through movies. And so their minds are continually being excited and fascinated by the occult world, which is made to look good if they stay within the white realm of it. And of course, it's also meant to look fearful if you go to the dark side, but they're being told that they can control not going into the dark side, whereas in the world of Harry Potter, you know, you can see that there are dangers in that dark side, and J.K. Rowling, the author, says that each book is darker and darker, and she's going to be coming out with book number 7 in July, and of course Warner Brothers is coming out with film number 5 based on book number 5 in July. So here we have this barrage of more child-friendly witchcraft, and then you've got the hero of Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, who has been playing the role of Harry Potter, who just in a couple of weeks is going to be on the theatre in the West End, on the stage in the West End, appearing nude and naked in an erotic scene with a horse. So here this young 17-year-old boy who millions of children all over the world see as their hero is getting into this sort of perverse child pornography, and kids are just being bombarded sort of desensitization of morality, desensitization of occultism, and not being able to know what is right and what is wrong. It's a very, very scary world for young children, I think.
Well, I think they've targeted the minds of our children, and they're doing such a good job through the miracle of video and through the miracle of film. And the average parent doesn't have any idea that this is not simply fun and games. They're really gambling with the souls of their children, because that's what this is really all about. And, you know, I was just thinking, Carol, looking back 30 years, you know, when I was getting started in my study, I had no idea that there was this other realm out there, that there was another dimension. The idea of the true supernatural was so far from my mind, because after all, I lived in a materialistic world. And it really wasn't until the early 1980s that I began to realize that there is this other dimension, there is this other place out there that where so much of this spiritual battle is being fought. And, you know, until people understand that the purpose of witchcraft is to be able to reach the beings from the other dimension, and they really are able to do that. That's the frightening thing. They're in communion with them. They think that their good spirits are going to help them, but of course they're not good spirits. They will tell you, well, they're white witches and black witches. No, they're all black witches. They're only shades of gray. And of course, they're dabbling with things they have no idea about and will very well cost them their eternal souls. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment here with Carol Matriciana, and of course her new film is going to be on yoga. I can hardly wait to see it. Well, Carol, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, Dr. Stan, I just would encourage all your viewers to keep in touch with everything you do, listen to you regularly, go into your shop, buy your product, and please come and visit my webpage, www.caryltv.com, and learn and become enlightened to discern, learn about the times we live in, discern the times we live in. These are treacherous times, and we need to be completely as wise as serpents and gentle as doves in these days when our minds are being clouded, whether it's through Islam, the invasion of Islam in America, in fact, that's going to be my next film after this one on yoga, but just to be able to see what is taking place and how they are targeting our young children is very scary indeed. And I thank you so much for what you are doing in alerting and waking up the American public to the dangers in all sorts of realms, in the health realm, in the physical realm, in the spiritual realm. I thank you very, very much.
Well, I think we're really very, very privileged to have the opportunity to have a voice in time like this, and to know that we have people all throughout the world who are listening to our programs. In fact, it's sort of an awesome responsibility because, of course, I feel that I have to present, you know, a reflection of what we would hope that Christians should. And, of course, being a fallible human being, sometimes when we'll have somebody come on, will be very rude and do everything you can to get us antagonized and not to respond, you know, as you ordinarily would anticipate. But, of course, to try to make people understand that Christians are different. And, of course, this is not because we're different on our own, but only because of our reliance on our Lord. And hopefully we can have some impact on people, and hopefully some of our listeners will come to know the Lord. That's my hope and purpose, because I'm certainly not here to entertain. I'm here to make people understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, and they certainly better find out which side of that battle they're on, because there's no neutral position there. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's the reason I make each of my films, and every one of them I try and take the opportunity of showing the difference between the two sides. The side that Jesus Christ has come to set us free from sin. He is our Savior. He wants us to have a time with Him in eternity. And then the other side, His rebellious fallen angels that want to dupe us. And
hold up for just 30 seconds here, and I'll let you finish the thought here. Well, Carol was simply talking about this battle that exists, and there really are two sides. There's certainly the sides of Christianity, and then the sides of the demons and the fallen angels, and you're going to have to decide which side you're on, because there is no neutral position here. Why don't you finish your thought there, Carol?
Exactly. There just absolutely isn't. You know, Jesus Christ himself came to set us free from this absolutely awful condition that we are caught in, the condition of sin, and we can either give our lives to Christ, who has set us free from that, or we can attempt to set ourselves free through all sorts of human methods and ideologies and philosophies and mind-bending and mind-twisting remedies. which I'm afraid will absolutely lead nowhere. And I can tell you because I was involved in the dark side and have certainly seen both sides of the supernatural world. And I thank my Lord Jesus Christ every day for setting me free from the dark side.
God bless you. Good night, Carol. And we'll look forward to having you on again sometime.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Night.
All right, fine. Well, certainly Carol Matriciana is one of my favorite guests. We always enjoy having her with us here. And I hope you'll heed what she has to say. She's come from the other side. She realizes this supernatural power is not imaginary. It is real. But you do not want to even think about tapping into it. Oh, you may get a great wealth. You may get great pleasure. You may get all sorts of advantages and recognition. But you'll pay for what you gain here with your eternal soul. So, understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. We do hope that many of you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and we do carry a number of Carol's videos and or DVDs. And we actually in the past have carried some of Carol's books. We'll have to check and see if we still have them. We do have a wonderful book. It's called The Beautiful Side of Evil. It's written by Johanna Michelson, who is a medium, who is actually, being trained as a psychic healer until she suddenly found this was all demonic. That's The Beautiful Side of Evil, and then our 4-tape set on the supernatural with my interviews with Johanna Michelson. You certainly want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which begins to put this into a geopolitical perspective. You'll certainly want to get Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil, the story of five exorcisms which were certified by the Catholic Church. And I will tell you, when you read that book, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. We also recommend that people will get the 4-tape set we have, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. You get them together, the book and the 4-tape set, that certainly reduce consideration. We do hope that, of course, many of you will get the videos we carry. They sold their souls for rock and roll, pointing out how these influences are in the music business and the music industry. If you've not yet seen the Da Vinci Con put out by our good friend Pastor Joe Schimmel, who put out the DVDs, They Sold Their Soul, the Da Vinci Con goes into what Hollywood is doing and the influence of Gnosticism, which is simply a throwback to an ancient heresy that existed in the first century A.D. And of course, that can be traced back to the teachings of the ancient Kabbalah, which can be traced back to the ancient mystery religions. And there is a continuity of evil since the Garden of Eden, and it is coming to its culmination at this very time we live in. We live in one of the most exciting times in all history. But you better understand what's going on and whose side you're on. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com, where you can listen directly or indirectly to our radio programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, 4 hours a day on shortwave, where, of course, you can listen to our programs 9 hours a day on Telstar 5 satellite. We don't expect you to do it. We hope that you're going to tell others about our programs, but listen when you can. Get educated. And, of course, get the material we talk about. Pull down our web, pull down our newsletters. Read them, save them, study them, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network.